This GX on Agriculture podcast is brought to you by Haas Nissan in Yorkton.
To the people tending the land and animals that feed us and support our community, we at Haas Nissan want to say thank you on behalf of all those who depend on you, the farmer. Like you, we are a family business with family values you can depend on. Haas Nissan, where a handshake still means something.
GX on Agriculture with Rod McDonald.
Good afternoon. It's 15 after 12, quarter after 1 in Manitoba, and welcome to the Friday edition of our program. Coming up on GX on Agriculture today, representatives from the Canadian cattle industry conducted a media town hall meeting yesterday. We'll hear a portion of that meeting coming up on the program here today. We'll also resume our discussion with plant scientist Tim Charbel from the University of Saskatchewan. He's part of a team of researchers looking to map the cannabis genome. Also, Grain Millers in Yorkton has hung out the help wanted shingle. We'll hear from General Manager Terry Tyson. First, though, the Agriculture Weather Outlook is a presentation of Yorkton Raymore and Watrous New Holland and Sean Prahika, your REMAX Blue Chip Ag Division Specialist.
Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather.
Time now for Precision Weather with meteorologist Phil Spivak. Phil, how are we looking for the weekend?
Well, not bad at all. We've got some sunshine for today. Temperatures are going to be running above average, so above freezing, and not bad. Now, Sunday is going to be still not bad, but a little breezier. And by the time we get to the end of the weekend, we'll see a little more cloud cover coming in. And with that wind driving in from the south, it stays warm. But as we turn a little wetter, we'll get some rain. That'll be for the start of the week. The weekend, again, looks up to be in great shape. So stepping outside, breathe a little air should be just fine for that. Temperature this afternoon in the low single numbers. It is a little breezy today. We'll have that wind come down quickly, though, tonight. West to northwest, we've got 25 to 45 this afternoon. It'll drop down by evening, almost non-existent. The cloud cover, very limited for today. We'll see it gradually increasing tonight. So by tomorrow morning, we'll call it partly cloudy. The night as a whole, though, I think we can almost safely call it mainly clear, because it'll take until 3 or 4 o'clock to really get noticeable cloud cover in. Down to minus 3 for tonight. Tomorrow, partly to mostly sunny with a high near 6, and we're under a mix of sun and cloud on Sunday. High is 7. Again, watch for that increase in the wind Sunday afternoon. Southeast first, then south to southeast wind, setting up for Sunday evening, Sunday night, into Monday. But it brings in some warmer air, too. Monday's high around 11. We'll look for a couple of showers to set up for Monday night and Tuesday. And southerly wind on Monday becomes more of a northerly wind by Tuesday. Frontal system goes by that takes those showers from the overnight, changes them over to snow as the temperature comes down through the day. Our high for the day on Tuesday, likely in the mid-single numbers. But through the day, we'll start to drop off, heading down to around minus 4 for the end of the day. Now, it's not going to be a lot of snow early on, likely just a few sprinkles and flurries for the first part of the day, steadier snow coming in by the end of the day. And then we clear out, setting into a cooler pattern, but mostly dry through the middle of next week.
All right, thank you, Phil. Now, let's turn to the temperature roundup. It's minus 1 in La Paw, along with Roblin. Plus 1 this hour for Shoal Lake Russell, 0 in Saskatoon, 2 degrees in Swan River, 3 in Dauphin, Brandon, 4. Regina also reporting 4 degrees, Hudson Bay, 2, Broadview, Mooseman, and Indian Head, both 3 degrees, and Wynyard, Wadena, and Kelvington, minus 2. In the Yorkton Melville region, it's sunny. The wind is west-northwest at 32, relative humidity 69%, and our temperature has been holding steady throughout the morning, now into the early afternoon at 0. Yesterday's high and low, plus 1 and minus 7 normals for this date. Daytime highs around 3 with overnight lows near minus 9. Moose Jaw was the warmest place in the province yesterday, topping out at 7 degrees. Uranium City, the Saskatchewan cold spot, at minus 24. In Manitoba, Melitta got up to 6. To Dooley Lake, the Manitoba cold spot, at minus 23. Sunrise this morning was at 6:36, and the sun will set this evening at 7:14. Again, our current temperature, 0.
Beef and Forage Report.
The Canadian livestock sector is coping the best it can during the COVID-19 outbreak. The Canadian Cattlemen's Association and the National Cattle Feeders Association participated in a media town hall meeting yesterday. Speaking on behalf of the CCA was Executive Director Dennis Laycraft.
We continue to work very closely with all sectors of the beef cattle industry across Canada to address the various challenges that COVID-19 is presenting to us. And we're working very closely with the Government of Canada on a range of issues, obviously, clearly with the Canadian Food Inspection Agency, with Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada, and on the labor files in particular, and trade. And overall, you know, we continue to focus our efforts, first of all, on helping stop the spread of COVID-19 and developing protocols to allow our industry and what I'll refer to as the frontline food workers to do their jobs safely and efficiently and ensure the safe supply of food across our nation here. And we're also working very diligently to ensure our businesses can continue to operate effectively, and we're getting cattle moved where they need to get moved, and maintaining the supply of cattle to ensure we have a regular supply of beef available across the country.
Laycraft says overall the beef supply chain is functioning quite well.
We've actually seen increased production occur to meet the increased demand that has largely shifted to retail demand as a result of the restrictions on individuals is impacting on food service business. And talking more specifically about meeting the needs of Canadians and keeping product on the shelves, not just in Canada, but around the world, Canada has made a commitment, as a number of other countries that are export producers, that, you know, we're here to ensure that beef is available on the counters, not just in Canada, but in those key markets that we regularly service around the world. We're also working to make sure that as these various provincial rules come into effect, that the product flows seamlessly across the country as well. There have been questions about the transport of goods and services over borders. So again, back on our website, there is information on that to ensure, first of all, truckers are able to move efficiently and safely, making sure the flow of goods continues. Our markets, we've seen some recovery over the last 10 days. Certainly the retail demand for beef is strong right now, and we're working extra shifts in order to meet those demands. We're also on the production side in the middle of what we'll refer to as bull sale season. And overall, we've so far seen the sales remain quite consistent with last year. And, you know, we feel very good about how our industry has worked together to incorporate best management practices across our vast country.
Laycraft says the Canadian Cattlemen's Association has made some requests to the federal government, including that COVID-19 be deemed a natural disaster under the Agri-Recovery Program.
That opens up some options there that aren't normally available, as this has reached every size and structure of operation or industry. We've asked to eliminate the $3 million cap on agriculture stability and invoke the late payment or late participation clause, sorry. And we're also looking with price insurance, with the extraordinary volatility in the market, the premiums have gotten considerably higher as a result of that, and looking at some way of getting those premiums more affordable.
Dennis Laycraft, Executive Director of the Canadian Cattlemen's Association. Janice Tranberg from the National Cattle Feeders Association provided an update on what's being done on the labor front.
I'm going to talk to you a little bit about what's happening with the temporary foreign workers. So it's been very clear that the Government of Canada understands the need for temporary foreign workers. In an update that we had yesterday from Minister Bibeau, she reinforced that food security is her number one priority. And then late last week, the government announced that temporary foreign workers will be allowed to enter the country, but work is still underway to make the necessary regulatory changes to allow that to occur. We're being told that should be very shortly. One of the issues that they've identified is working with the source countries where temporary foreign workers are coming in from. The issues are around their own international travel challenges associated with COVID as they work to, implement travel bans themselves. But the government is working very closely with them.
Tranberg says foreign workers entering Canada and who aren't showing any symptoms will be allowed to travel to their final destination.
But then at that point, they will have to self-isolate for 14 days, same as everybody else. And they will be needing to practice all the precautions that everyone else has to, such as social distancing. The other good news that we heard is that for workers that are currently in Canada, that they any LMIAs that or permits that are currently available will be increased from 1 year to 2 years automatically, and that all new LMIs being sought, the government will consider agriculture as a priority.
Janice Tranberg is president and CEO of the National Cattle Feeders Association. She participated, along with representatives from the Canadian Cattlemen's Association, in a media town hall event yesterday. And that is today's Beef and Forage Report. It's coming up on 12:30 now, 1:30 in Manitoba. It's time for Ag Review, a presentation of Peebles Machine and Welding in Yorkton.
To the people tending the land and animals that feed us and support our community, we at Haas Nissan want to say thank you on behalf of all those who depend on you, the farmer. Like you, we are a family business with family values you can depend on. Haas Nissan, where handshakes still mean something.
GX94, AgriView.
The Canadian Federation of Agriculture says it's been informed that travel restrictions for temporary foreign workers have formally been lifted. In a tweet sent out late yesterday, the CFA stated, "Health details are forthcoming, but flight bookings can begin as soon as possible." Mary Robinson is president of the Canadian Federation of Agriculture. She underlines the importance of the temporary foreign workers, especially in the horticulture sector.
Canadian farmers always prefer to hire local people. It's so much easier and it's wonderful to do. But unfortunately, what we have seen is we've seen quite a gap in the availability of labor to agriculture. In 2017, we brought in 59,500 foreign workers. And these people, a lot of them come back to the same farm year over year. So they're kind of extended family members for a lot of our farm families.
Meantime, there's an interesting idea in the works in Alberta. That province's agriculture minister, Devin Dreeshan, is proposing a method of connecting employers with Canadians interested in working in a processing facility or on a farm.
We are looking at a job matching program here in the province of Alberta, where we can, if you were a dishwasher and you can't go to work anymore, well, washing potatoes isn't that much different. So we are looking at kind of skills matching and job matching, where we could see a lot more Albertans and possibly urbanites going out and working out on farms, which I think overall is really good to A, help push this blow, but also to have a greater connection between general Albertans and rural Albertans.
Dreeshan didn't indicate a start date on the proposed urban-rural job match program. A three-week lockdown in India aimed at stopping the COVID-19 coronavirus has left farmers holding the bag, or the produce in this case. During the lockdown, police are preventing farmers from delivering perishables, pushing up prices, and forcing some farmers to feed their ripening produce to their animals instead. India's prime minister announced the nationwide lockdown on Tuesday in the world's most ambitious bid to control the coronavirus epidemic. Photographs of baton-wielding police beating people violating the order have gone viral on social media. U.S. and European wheat futures have gained some momentum this week. Traders say Russia's plan to cap grain exports for the rest of the season in a bid to protect domestic supply put attention back on potential supply tensions during the coronavirus epidemic. Russia's proposal for a grain export quota of 7 million tons for the April through June period was in line with market expectations for Russian shipments, but raised concern that it might be followed by other restrictions. Wheat prices had already rallied to two-month highs this week as panic buying of food staples during the coronavirus crisis fueled milling demand and spurred speculative buying. Grain prices were showing upward movement this week. Adam Puccolo is a commodity futures advisor with PI Financial in Regina. He says Chicago wheat futures jumped 15 to 40 cents a bushel.
There's quite a lot of interesting moves, actually. Starting off with on the wheat front, Chicago wheat had continued its rally from last week, like I mentioned. So this week alone, we have seen close to about a 40-cent rally in the Chicago wheat futures. Now, Minneapolis actually didn't follow as much of the increase, increasing about 15 cents here right now currently. So that is something that I'm going to be watching. Now, on the wheat markets, there is reports that countries have been buying commodities and just really stockpiling given the way that the economies are right now. So I think that was one of the main reasons for the fund buying of the wheat. However, you know, we are starting to reach some levels on the futures not reached since last January. So that's where I am talking with producers on even how much they've sold for new crop, if they're wanting to put in any hedges and different strategies.
Puccolo says canola futures are up a couple of bucks this week.
It was actually a little bit higher, closer to about 10 at one point on Wednesday, but the futures have since kind of declined. On the soybean and soy market side of things, soy meal had a massive increase. However, it started to decline. Same with on the soybean prices. Now, one other thing too, on the Canadian dollar, it did actually increase here this week as well too. The futures are sitting at approximately 71 cents here today. So the futures are coming off the bottom. So that probably added a little bit of negativity to canola prices. And just today, the Bank of Canada did lower rates again to 0.25% for the benchmark rate. So that's something that I believe will impact all Canadians going forward.
Adam Puccolo is a commodity futures advisor with PI Financial in Regina. Research conducted by the University of Saskatchewan's Department of Soil Science indicates pulse crops are sensitive to seed row fertilizer. Soil fertility professor Jeff Shano and his team conducted a controlled field experiment evaluating the emergence, yield, and nutrient uptake responses to the starter seed row, placed fertilizer blends containing nitrogen, phosphorus, and sulfur. Six pulse crops were in the study: lentils, peas, chickpeas, soybeans, black beans, and faba beans. Shano says the strongest injury potential occurred in lentils, peas, and chickpeas.
We do need to be cognizant of that injury potential when we put fertilizer in the seed row. It does differ depending on the pulse crop. And as we increase the proportion of nitrogen in there relative to phosphorus, for example, by having urea in a blend, it does increase that injury potential. And again, paying attention to those maximum safe rates that are available in the provincial guidelines, the Saskatchewan Ministry of Agriculture, I think is important to avoid injury. Higher rates, get it out of that seed row and get it in a separate band.
Detailed results of this study can be viewed on the Saskatchewan Pulse Growers website. And the Manitoba government says it's more than doubling the funding for a program that helps municipalities prepare for spring flooding. Manitoba Municipal Relations Minister Rochelle Squires says initially the 2020 flood protection program was capped at $3 million, but she says in light of the need for preparation this spring, the funding will increase to $8 million for projects in areas across the province. Funding covers a range of items, including generators, pumps, steaming equipment to unclog frozen culverts, utility trailers, equipment for emergency operation centers, sandbags, and other small equipment. And that is today's Ag Review. It's coming up on 12:38 now, 1:38 in Manitoba. A quick break, then we have the Livestock Market Report coming up next.
Livestock Market Conditions.
Well, it was certainly a tough day for livestock markets today. April live cattle futures closed at $100.95 a hundredweight. That was down $4.50 today. June live cattle, $89.42. Down 412. April feeder cattle, 120.60, down 450. May feeder cattle, 120.92 a hundredweight, also down 450. April lean hogs closed today at 58.45, down 445. And May lean hogs, 57.62 a hundredweight, also, and that's down 450. Those are today's closing U.S. livestock futures. We'll check the grain prices coming up in about 10 minutes from now at 10 to 1, 10 to 2 in Manitoba. Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. I'm Rod McDonald. If you were with us yesterday, you heard the first portion of an interview I did with Tim Charbel. He's a plant scientist in the College of Agriculture and Bioresources at the University of Saskatchewan, and he's participating in an international study of marijuana. Specifically, they want to unlock the cannabis genome to realize the full potential of marijuana for agricultural and human health purposes. I asked Charbel if there's sound scientific evidence that marijuana can provide health benefits.
There's tons of evidence. There's a lot of evidence out there, right? But the problem is it hasn't been kind of networked properly, right? And so... a lot of it, there's this kind of inklings of something happening, right? But then you kind of have to make the studies larger to really, you know, put a hammer, you know, to really hammer the nail in, you know, to kind of like, without a doubt there are benefits, right? But when you say there's a benefit, once again, a benefit from what, right? And everyone, of course, is focused on CBD, right, is one benefit. And I'm not criticizing that and saying there's no benefit from it or no effect, right? But then if you add CBD and, you know, 15 other terpenes at different varying concentrations, maybe that has another effect, right? Or so on. And so that's really the importance of that. Once again, I'm hoping I'm accentuating the importance of knowledge of the genetics and the genomics behind these things, that's important, right?
There are literally hundreds of different strains of marijuana. I asked Charbel if each different strain is going to provide different health benefits.
Yeah, and I guess your first point, there's hundreds of different strains. We don't know, right? There's zillions of bags of seeds out there where people have, and people put names on those bags, right? So Purple Kush, Lemon Haze, all these things, right? You have no idea what any of that stuff is, right? So, and this is what I mean by, you know, if we wanted to network the industry together, you know, as a country, right, as a Canadian industry, then what we should have is a centralized core, in genetics terms, you call it a core collection, right? So essentially what we're trying to develop is a core collection, right? And the core collection is a collection of seed bags, right? And that could be 100,000, I don't know. But we define those seed bags genetically, and we say, okay, you know, this is, so when you want to refer to Purple Kush, you know, or whatever, it doesn't matter what you call the things, right? But essentially they're defined genetically, and we can say, okay, this is the, you know, the sum of all the genetic variation in this population or this bag of seeds. And then what you can do is, there's many, many statistical methods you can use basically to say, okay, if we work with this core set of genotypes or seed bags, that we have essentially all of the power, statistical power, to breed whatever we want, you know, or more efficiently within, you know, as we like develop the industry, right? So, and then that core set becomes kind of the accession that all companies, you know, at least to begin with, or anyone interested in doing research, they all access that core collection, because that's the kind of, once again, it's the blueprint, it's the foundation, and so on. Now, that's not to say you can't, you know, bring in other things, right? But once again, that core collection has, the more data you add to it, the more inherent statistical value it has to it. And, you know, with your ability to draw conclusions that, you know, things are correlated with, a particular application in human beings, for example.
Cannabis for recreational use has been legal in Canada for well over 2 years now, but Charbel says there's still a stigma attached to it.
And that's why, first and foremost, there has to be scientific legitimacy behind it, right? So it's not a bunch of, you know, I don't want to, you know, denigrate and use any words like that, but simply to say, you know, medicinal plants, on the larger scale, medicinal plants are hugely important. And it's very interesting because I spent my last 20 years in Germany. I'm Canadian. I lived in Germany, did my PhD there and so on, and stayed there. And I was a scientist there for 20 years. And it's incredible because medicinal plants are highly accepted and very important parts of society in Europe, right? So when my children were growing up and I was bringing them up in Germany, I had a very Canadian perspective, which is, you know, give them a pill for everything. Whereas if your kid had an earache, you would boil chamomile tea and let it cool down, and then you'd squirt it in the kid's ears because chamomile has antibacterial effects, right? So simply to say that, you know, medicinal plants are totally serious. And they have, you know, in some cases when they're traditional plants, they have thousands of years of traditional use, right? In the indigenous communities of Canada, for example. And so what we're doing now is, or what I'm trying to do, is to add the analytical legitimacy to help try to understand, you know, what are the effects. So if we are going to say, you know, it's X, then let's understand why. And then so, and with that legitimacy, then the stigma will go away as well, right? And so, you know, people will really see. I mean, of course, it's a recreational plant. I mean, it's been, you know, fermented for a long time, right? And so I'm not saying that, you know, we're not removing that. That's always going to be there, right? But clearly there are important effects, right? And, you know, if we can, you know, my feeling about medicinal plants in general is, you know, we spend huge sums of money, you know, of our budgets, you know, on fixing people who are responding negatively to, you know, how we live and eat and so on, right? So what if we took some of that money and put it right up at front and just treated people with plants and get them to eat better foods or, you know, and so on, right? And that they're and so, and that's the idea on a more general level, right? So and I guess the final thing I would say is all these medicinal plants, you know, that's biodiversity, right? And so in, you know, harnessing the knowledge that has been generated over so many generations in cannabis or in other plants, then we add value to biodiversity and thereby giving us a reason to protect it. So, you know, I see cannabis as kind of a focal point right now, and clearly there's an industry to be developed and therefore funding, but I'm greatly interested on a much larger level about really moving medicinal plants more into mainstream. You know, I'm a researcher, so clearly we need funding for people and so on. But we can do these things, right? And clearly my experience in St. John's Wort and chamomile shows that you can do these things, right? But not just me, of course. I mean, there's a zillion people, many researchers on the world have been doing this for a long time. I'm just trying to, you know, help accentuate it more.
Charbel says they also believe that cannabis can reduce the use of opioids. So I asked him if marijuana can completely replace the use of some opioids.
If I said that, pharmaceutical companies would blow my car up. No, I'm just kidding. Yes, I think so. Treating human beings is incredibly complex, as we all know, right? And hence, the push towards personalized medicine, right? So we know that different, you know, human beings can very easily be divided to different, you know, genetic groups. That's our simply our history and biogeography of human beings. Nothing, and that's just the way it is, right? And what's becoming more and more clear is that, you know, what's created for one group doesn't work on another group, right? And so yes, it will treat things, but once again, but taking into consideration the variability of the genetics and biochemistry of the plant, as well as taking into consideration the genetics of the human being population, which is being tested, or the age group and so on, right? So that's why. And so having that resolution enables you to draw the statistical correlations.
Tim Charbel is a plant scientist in the College of Agriculture and Bioresources at the University of Saskatchewan. He's participating in an international study looking to closely define marijuana, or specifically, they want to break down the genome and map the genome of marijuana. The cannabis research was partially funded by the Canada Earth Foundation. cannabis company. It's 10 to 1 now, 10 to 2 in Manitoba.
Commodities update.
Well, canola futures certainly fared a lot better than livestock futures today. May canola closed at $4.62.90. It was up 10 cents. July canola, $4.71.80, up 20 cents. May Minneapolis wheat, $5.39 a bushel, up 7¾. May Kansas City wheat, $4.86¾, down a half a cent. May Chicago wheat closed today at $5.71¼, up 2¼. May corn was down at the close, $3.46 a bushel, down 2¾ cents. May soybeans, $8.81½, up 1¼. And May oats closed today at $2.65½, up 4½ cents. Many businesses have been forced to close their doors or otherwise scale back operations due to the COVID-19 outbreak, but some others are flourishing. The spread of the virus has led to consumers stockpiling many staple items such as bread and pasta. Depleted store shelves in both the U.S. and Canada reflect hoarding and a spike in demand for foods consumed at home. Terry Tyson is general manager of Grain Millers in Yorkton. He says business there is booming.
Basically across our sales platform, all oat products, that includes sort of our business-to-business or industrial business, if you will, that we sell to food companies who use our products as an ingredient in their products, and in our direct-to-retail, our co-manufacturing business for our, you know, Canadian store brand oatmeal. We see, I think there's a two-part sort of cause for that. Part of it is that hoarding, that panic buying. The other part of it, though, is that there is certainly some real consumption behind that, with people home for three squares a day, even, you know, kids are home, what the heck are we going to do with these kids all day, let's bake something. So we've seen that actually even in my household, where on the weekend we were baking bread, and there's muffins. It's tough on a guy trying to diet right now.
Tyson says there's a lot of pressure to produce enough to meet customer demand, but so far they've been able to keep up.
Maybe barely. It's, I think in general, we've got customers asking for moved up ship dates and increased orders, and we aren't always able to say yes to those requests. Thus far, we have been able to satisfy most of them, but we are, you know, basically at max capacity, while at the same time dealing with, of course, the need to be extra cautious with our labor pool in, you know, in the context of flu-like symptoms or cold-like symptoms or you know, hopefully not, but what could become worse, right?
Do you think the demand will remain strong beyond the COVID-19 outbreak?
Hard to tell for sure. I think we would anticipate somewhat of a sag, and it really, the crystal ball gets fuzzy whether or not it's a prolonged sag because people have stocked up so much, or how much of this this increase is that real consumption that I talked about in terms of people being at home and people you know, kind of doing extra things with baked goods and staple foods. And so I think we do, and you know, we anticipate that we'll see, you know, when this ends or blows over, we'll see things at least return to normal, possibly sag a little bit more than that.
Grain Millers just commissioned a second mill in Yorkton in the fall. Tyson says it's not running at full tilt yet.
So the mill is fully operational, but we have not been running it 24/7. Our existing or pre-existing mill runs 24/7. We've been running the B mill, which is what we call it, 4 days a week based on demand up till now. As a result of this spike in demand, we are looking right now to add a fifth day a week to production in that in the new mill. And so we've gone to market looking for some additional folks and look to make that move as quickly as possible. At the same time, we've also we're doing the same thing on the retail packaging line, so that direct to the stores aspect of our business, where we've seen a major increase in demand. We're adding a shift to that line and taking it 24/7, which adds another four heads. All in all, we're looking for 10 people right now.
So how does somebody apply for a job during these times of social distancing?
We've set up a catch box inside of our foyer. Drop applications here. There is some ability to do that online. If people have that, you can apply online. Our postings are on SaskJobs. And that type of thing. So other than that, once you get past that, we've been doing interviews remotely, either by conference call or FaceTime, that type of thing. And at a given point, if we're making the hire, there's a screening process where we're going to, be asking questions about health and symptoms and where you've been and that kind of thing before we can let you into the building.
Terry Tyson, General Manager of Grain Millers in Yorkton. It's 12:58, now 1:58 in Manitoba, and we'll close out today's program with our precision weather forecast for the Quill Lakes, Hudson Bay, Swan River, Broadview-Moosomin, Indian Head, Yorkton, Melville, Roblin, and Russell regions. Partly to mainly sunny this afternoon. Windy, west-northwest, 25 to 45, but it will die down. High near plus 2. A few clouds tonight, wind south-southeast 10 to 20. Overnight low minus 3. Partly to mainly sunny tomorrow, wind west-southwest 15 to 25. We'll shoot for a high near 6 tomorrow. Partly sunny Sunday, east-southeast wind 15 to 25, 7 degrees for a daytime high. Partly to mainly sunny Monday, high up around 11. Then Tuesday, things turn around, 60% chance of snow on Tuesday. Temperature plus 3, falling during the day to minus 5. Now, this hour's temperature roundup. It's minus 1 in La Paw and Roblin, minus 2 degrees in Wynyard, Wadena, and Kelvington. We have plus 2 in Swan River and Hudson Bay, 3 degrees in Broadview, Moosomin, Indian Head, and Dauphin, 4 in Brandon and Regina. In Saskatoon, reporting 0 this hour. In the Yorkton-Melville region, sunny, windy, west-northwest at 32. Relative humidity is 69%. Our temperature has been holding steady for the past several hours at 0. And that's it for today and this week. Plan to join me again Monday afternoon at 12:15, of course 1:15 in Manitoba, for GX on Agriculture. I'm Rod McDonald.
CJGX, a Harvard radio station serving Saskatchewan and Manitoba. We are GX94.